are set to go.
Okay, very good. Okay, good evening and welcome to all. This is the Cameron Park Budget Administration Committee meeting on Tuesday, August 8th, 2023. It's about 4:01 p.m. and I'm Sid Bass and I'm chair of this committee. The first order of business is the roll call. General Manager, would you call the roll for us, please?
Director Bazette.
Present.
And Director Scobie.
Present.
And would you read the public testimony statement, please?
Public testimony will be received on each agenda item as it is called. Principal parties on each side of an issue is allocated 10 minutes to speak. Individual comments are limited to 3 minutes except for the consent of the committee. Individuals shall be allowed to speak on any item only once. Members of the audience are asked to volunteer their name before addressing the committee. The committee reserves the right to waive such rules by a majority vote.
Thank you very much. General Manager Scobie, have you had a chance to review the agenda?
Well, not a general manager, but
Did I call you general manager?
You did.
I'm sorry.
You thought you were going to trick me.
I see why you're paying attention.
Yes, I make a motion to adopt the agenda.
Okay, I'll second that motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, it is now time for the open forum.
Oh, so, approval of the conformed agenda, please?
I missed something. Thank
That's
you.
That's all right.
Moving too darn fast.
So,
okay, a second. all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, we have approved the conformed agenda. Now we are going to open forum. So members of the public, which we have enough turnout tonight, may speak on any item not on the agenda that falls within the responsibilities of the committee. So it would be on items that are not on the agenda. Does anyone wish to speak to this committee?
Yes, I do.
Please do.
I live in Cameron Park. I moved here about 8 years ago. And I received a flyer when I first moved here regarding all your activities through your CSP. And one of them was Steve Beck's futsal program. I assigned my daughters, Addison and Riley. One's a senior, one's a freshman, up with that program 8 years ago. That program is possibly the best program this community has to offer. A lot of Addison's friends and teammates have been playing in this program since we moved here. I've been brought to my attention that you're considering cutting back some of the service for this program. I find that to be appalling. In the age of fentanyl, opioid abuse for children, obesity, and screen time with TikTok. We're talking about taking away activities for kids. This seems a bit ridiculous when you consider that this program is self-funded. Now, Steve is always open. If you have another event that needs to take place in that gym, I've had games rescheduled for Steve because of this. So it's not an opportunity issue. It seems a little different to me. So I'd like to know exactly what our considerations are for cutting back on a service that adds value to the community, that adds value to the community service district, in your case, but yet we want to reduce the services for no opportunity, because I drive by this gym quite frequently because I live just on Bertella Road, and I often see it empty. So I don't quite understand what benefit this community has, considering I pay property taxes for this building, to sit empty when you have an opportunity to make money and provide opportunity for your children in your community to avoid these bad habits.
We can't actually respond to what you're saying. You just give us a chance and we'll take it in. Do either of your daughters want to speak?
Riley, you want to speak about the joy this Steve Beck brings to this community?
And maybe explain the sport a little bit to us, too.
Oh, what's up?
It basically is like soccer, but it's indoors. And it's like it's a fun opportunity because you're not always playing during the weekend, so you're kind of in there. Like Friday night's always fun. Like I've been going for 7-8 years, so.
That's great. Thank you. Thank you very much. Anyone else want to address the committee members? If not, we're closing.
That's all right. I think that. Actually, I might be able to answer some of your questions coming up because our agenda item, first agenda item is the final budget, which is a draft budget from this committee. Staff is making some recommendations to this committee that will carry to the board next week. And so I might be able to answer some of your questions about that. So,
anyway, we don't hear any input. We're not ignoring anything. But there's a place where you can address those things. Okay.
Yeah. So let me give you some more information on where we're at with our budget. And that might answer your question about reductions of the time availability in the community center, potentially, okay?
Anyone else wish to address the committee? Yes, sir.
Yeah, and just because while we're talking about this topic, I'd like the opportunity to speak to the board. it's okay right
and
now.
And that will be on the agenda, is that correct? Will that?
Yeah, I think the way you want to do this is to have me make the presentation on the proposed final budget.
And then you'll have a chance to
and
speak.
And then everybody can have a chance to speak on that a little bit. Is that how you want to do that?
Okay, because we do want to hear what you have to say. Thank you very much. Okay, very good. So are we someone else?
No?
Okay.
Well, I mean, I think what she was saying, I think we'll see the budget first and then kind of make comments from there and kind of know more.
Thank you for that. Excellent. Okay, very good. Okay, Department Matters. Now is the fiscal year 2023-24 final budget draft 2. General Manager, would you present on that, please?
Yeah. And would you go make some copies of the agenda packet for me, please, Kim? That would be awesome. So Kim will bring some copies in for everybody, so everybody has this. And many of you have been here. This is our third presentation to the Budget and Administration Committee. Many of you have been here before, but let me recap a little bit about where we've been, because we actually started this process in June at the board. We've had three committee meetings. This is the third committee meeting of the Budget and Admin Committee, and now we're going to the board again next week. So this is the last Budget and Administration Committee meeting prior to our board meeting next week. We actually began this process in June with our preliminary budget. There was a $1 million increase in our fire department operational cost due to increased costs in the fire CAL FIRE agreement. In addition, we did not budget any savings against that contract. In years past, there had been some savings in there, and so we did not budget for that savings. So we actually started back in June with a $1.2 million deficit and an $8 million, $7 million budget, which is pretty significant. That didn't even consider increases in liability insurance, district wages for labor, higher PG&E bills, or any of that stuff. So I would say that our deficit when we started this back in June was $1.5 million would be my estimate.
And insurance cost.
Mm-hmm. Insurance costs went up as well. We've reduced that deficit to today, it's $435,000, which is about a 5% deficit in an $8 million budget. Still not where we want to be. We would prefer to have a balanced budget as we have had in the past several years. But I don't know that we could achieve that without more significant reductions that would really impact the community. So we're trying to find that balance between making reductions to be fiscally responsible, but still providing those high impact programs that we have always provided. We have made a lot of reductions in our budget, and this report in here kind of captures the last of the reductions that we've made. At our last meeting, you asked for us to include the weed abatement on private properties so that we continue on our having a safe community for wildfires. We did put that in there, along with $50,000 worth of revenues.
Could you explain that a little further?
Mm-hmm. When we abate, we have a weed abatement ordinance. If you live in the county, you probably are aware of it. If someone is non-compliant with that ordinance, we have a pot of money to abate weeds on that property. And if we target properties where the homeowner lives in Cameron Park and not, say, overseas or something like that, we can recover our costs for that abatement activity either through direct billing or through a lien on the property. So that's why there's $50,000 worth of expenditures, $50,000 worth of revenues. So it's a cost neutral program. There is reduced staffing levels at the community center in our parks department and our recreation department. We have a recreation coordinator position that works with Kim that will not be filled. So that it was a cost savings about $65,000, but we won't be filling that. So that reduces the capacity of programming in our recreation department, as well as we've reduced staff at the community center and in our parks program for park maintenance, irrigation, mowing, and abatement, weed abatement and maintenance of our open space properties. That's why there is conversation about reducing the number of hours the community center is available for classes, programs, and things like that. So that's why Sundays was a day that was being considered. It's not final, but it is a day being considered that we could close the community center. A couple of evenings a week or mornings a week. It's difficult for us at this time to figure out exactly what that reduced schedule will look like. We have to look at what the traditional programming is and where those reductions make sense. As well as that there was a conversation about closing the pool in the winter months. We have met with both swim teams who are here today, and there is about a $50,000 savings, but I think that there's a lot of impact there because I believe that the having a pool open year-round really has a lot of service to the community. Kim talks about this skill development series of events that we have had. Staff had a very specific goal back in 2019 to expand programming at the community center and at the pool. And so we really had a big effort to continue with the futsal program and to have classes and to operate the pool year round. And this aquatics program that was put together, you know, starts with swim lessons with our smallest swimmers. They move into Sharks, who is a recreational team. They then can advance to Aquasol, which is a year-round team, and then they can advance and also become lifeguards and coaches, and the program is very circular here. And so there's kids that have enjoyed that kind of program, and families too that volunteer with the swim teams. And so that's that. Property tax revenues, we have increased them up to 6% based on the report by the County Auditor Controller's Office. What that demonstrates is our changing community. We're at 6% because there has been a lot of turnover in new home sales, new residents coming to our community that have bought a home. And I think a lot of those families are active adults and also families with young children. So I think that we're also, the community center and pool, those programs are expanding because of the change in our community. We've increased sports fields rentals. I decreased legal fees to what we used to have previously. And then I have a list of additional items for you to consider as additional reductions or changes. Our agreement with MRG for Dawn Services, Dawn Ashton, to provide services related to the annexation of the fire department to another local provider, that the cost of that agreement could be moved to out of the general fund to Fund 7. So it would be a savings in the general fund, but it would be a cost to Fund 7, which is our fire equipment rental revenues. I have had a conversation with the county, and they are interested in knowing what costs we have for annexation. So potentially they could pick up some of the AP Triton cost for annexation in addition to whatever LAFCO fees are. So I have some math in here, but basically that is a consideration that you may want to make today, is to move that agreement to reduce the general fund deficit. You could move that to Fund 7.
And the rationale for that is because those are revenues generated by fire equipment, mm-hmm. that we own,
mm-hmm.
and we're putting money into annexation that would consider other fire departments.
A sustainability.
It's fire for fire kind of.
Right, right. Well, and I think it's you have an initiative to make fire services more sustainable, and so this is included in that initiative. There is, I talked with Dusty earlier today, there is likely a battalion chief that is leaving in year one of their contract instead of waiting until year two. It's difficult for us to determine right now what the cost savings of that is going to be, because there will be some offsetting contract costs, but there could be some potential savings there, maybe at mid-year or something like that.
And the estimation of $250,000 is just that, or is that kind of a typical salary?
It's a typical salary. The Parks Department has an additional $35,000 allocation for weed abatement on district properties. You know, I did have a conversation with Dusty about this. I think it's difficult for us to have put $50,000 in the fire department budget for weed abatement on private properties and not have the same sort of treatment on parks properties. And so I would recommend, it's certainly something that we could remove, but at this point I would recommend, you know, keeping that in the budget, but we can certainly, Mike's always cost conscious, so anyway. And then my conclusion is that the budget in making these reductions, we've tried to have a very thoughtful process, but the specifics on what the reductions is going to do to the operation of the community center, parks, and the recreation department are still a little bit of unknown. We need to get staff together to say, this is a high-performing program. Do you have facility staff that can cover on those weekdays? How many facility staff do you have, and what's our coverage for the week? So all of those moving parts still have to be put together. It's difficult for us and very time consuming to run different scenarios. So I know it's a little concerning to approve a budget when you don't know the specifics of what's gonna happen, but it is something that you'll have to trust staff that we'll do the best we can with the allocation that we're given, and that we'll work with the Parks and Rec Committee, and that we'll return to the board if there's any significant developments.
So the process is that the two committee members will be asking questions of the general manager or other staff, and then we open to public input. Public can ask, and we get more of an open conversation, and then it comes back to board members. So, General Manager, no.
See?
I wanted to call you General. Director,
yes,
Scobie, do you have questions?
Yeah, I have a couple of comments. My first comment is on the using the fund balance to pay for the TRIC agreement and the MRG agreement. I am concerned that fund is currently over allocated. We have two fire engines coming out of it already.
Okay.
And I'm not convinced there's funds in there.
Okay,
so
I can take a look at that,
yeah,
a little bit more further.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm concerned about that. The other, regarding the early departure of the battalion chief, who's currently also helping out with our fire marshal plan reviews, we do have that contractor in place. Maybe it'd be good to check with them to see if they have the bandwidth to take on more of that role.
There is actually a meeting coming up. I think it might be next Monday or the week following to discuss just that. That agreement may elevate to the board due to the amount of money that we're spending. So.
Right, right, okay. The other comment I had is on, you know, the additional $35,000 the district's putting into a weed abatement compared to the $50,000 that we'd be mm-hmm. abating. We're not asking any one individual to bear $50,000.
Correct.
We are asking the district to bear an extra $35,000.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't abate all the properties in our district. We abate those that are most egregious or that need to be done or can get done.
On private property.
On private property. Mm-hmm. And so I'm still not in favor. If we want to spend more, I'm okay. I just don't think, given the urgency of our budget issues, I just don't think $35,000 is appropriate to budget in the weed abatement additional. We already are doing weed abatement, and this is on top of what we're doing when we're facing this type of deficit. Mm-hmm. So it does not make sense to me to allocate that much.
Okay.
So I'm just trying to give my my comments on that. If there is concern, maybe the better approach or an approach would be, let's lay out a plan. Let's lay out a 3 to 5 year plan how we would bring our district properties into compliance. Nobody would expect us to do it in 1 year. We know we can't abate the entire community in 1 year. So maybe the idea is to come up with a plan, not front $35,000 in the first year, maybe front less and then backload in the remaining years as we climb out of our current. So those are some of my comments. There's some line items in the budget that are a big change that are not, that have been discussed in prior committee mm-hmm. meetings. And I was hoping when we get to the format portion when it goes to the board that we actually call those out.
Yeah, we're working on it now. We are going to list all of the changes since June.
Good, I like that.
And actually, this is a question probably at the end of this meeting, but I wanted to get your feedback on how you want this presentation to go to the board.
Yeah, okay. There's, you know, we discussed about raising temperatures in the summer to save utilities and lowering them in the winter to save utilities. And I'm wondering if we could come up with some sort of estimate that we would save like maybe 5% on utilities, because our utility bill is big, but we really couldn't do that until we get more info from Brighton. Have they returned any calls? Or
I haven't reached out to them yet, but they're actually, there's an email sitting in my inbox right now.
Okay, good. Because I do think there's some wiggle room in there.
Okay.
How much, I don't know. I hear more from. Let's see, my other comments are, we are in a budget crunch. One way to balance a budget is you cut expenses or you increase revenue. So one of my thoughts is perhaps we can negotiate with our instructors and maybe pay them 5% less to the instructors. I don't know if we have what type of agreement we have in place for them, but perhaps we could generate some more revenue there, and or maybe 10%. We did have one gentleman say he'd take nothing. So I think that was something we could consider. I'd be curious to see what the impact of closing our front office would be. So if we reduce the hours to maybe 9 to 3 daily for only 6 hours and had a part-time staff member in there. And I know it's an inconvenience for the community, but that would probably be, I guess I would ask for staff recommendations. When's the majority of people come in to that front office? You know, so if we could reduce that and maybe cut that staff position, it's probably already at halftime, but when you're figuring out how to right-size the district, that might be something. Or, you know, other agencies close for an entire day on like Monday or Friday. So I would mention those. And again, raising revenue, have we looked at our current MOUs for our user groups? I saw 5,000 additional field use fees. Is that coming from a new MOU?
Yeah, the Little League MOU comes due is more of a calendar year, and I think swim teams also are negotiating more of a calendar year. So all of those agreements are coming forward.
Okay. Would are any additional revenues that we could realize from those in this budget?
Some were. We haven't negotiated them yet, so there may be some changes coming forward.
And we'd probably see that at mid-year?
Or sooner, you know, if we can get a gauge on what that could be.
Okay. And lastly, we might want to consider cutting director compensation for a year or two. Instead of doing three, paying for, you know, five meetings, let's drop it to two. And it's certainly not going to solve any of our budget problems, but it's more of a, we're all in this together type of thing, mm-hmm. and that, you know, we all want to contribute, so I would throw that out as well. The other comment is when we do come up with our final budget, I trust staff to come up with what the, you know, you're using the term right size, mm-hmm. right size our programs and the services that we can provide with the limited staff that we have. So when that happens, I think it's important that when you come forward that you articulate what those would be, you know, such as, you know, we've heard things as, you know, closing the center on Sundays, closing bathrooms in the park, mm-hmm. Perhaps closing the dog park, shutting down the pool in the winter. All of these need to come forward to the committee, to the community, before we, as possibilities, so that mm-hmm. people hear them and the community come, like they are here tonight, making, yep. Providing input. I do like the idea of having some trusted user groups be able to use our center when staff is not here. I don't know if we have to provide them some sort of training, if we need to install certain type of key locks on the doors, because, for example, I went to an Airbnb and they wouldn't let me check in till like 3, and I could not type in early.
It was electronic,
yeah. And I could not get in early, despite my best efforts. So,
and the beauty of that, we can change it if we need to at any time.
Yeah. And then that might be a way we can keep some user groups operating while still, you know, looking out with what's best for the district, and making sure people are abiding by the rules, and, you know, just common sense type of stuff. The other thing that I see missing from this budget is that a lot of our budget cuts over the years have come on the backs of our staff, and we have staff currently being paid just barely over the federal poverty level, and for a family of four, that's just terrible. And so I think if we're going to right size what we can do, we need to right size our wages, because they are low. They don't correspond with what's out in the surrounding community. We have people leaving. We have people mm-hmm. who come and they work. They can't afford to work here. So they quit, we're stuck, we're in this constant churn. We can't keep people here. And if we're gonna right-size our community, let's do it right, let's have wages that can support a family. And I'm not saying we're paying rocket science wages, but not federal poverty level either. So I think that's important, and I think we need to highlight that as we move forward. And that's my comments.
Thank you. Okay, I've got a few, and I agree with many of what you're saying. And I'm actually glad Mike is here, because having a combination or an electronic opening, I think, is really a smart way. We were looking at just some criteria, but I'd even put up just a pilot program. We pick some of the best people that we've had, really, and you too as well, Kim, is that people we've shown a good history and reliability, we start with those. We don't have to do it for everybody, but certainly that could be part of our conversation. How can we keep some of these facilities open, even if there's not staff here? And maybe a checklist, these are responsibilities to do them, or maybe even a deposit. So I like your pilot
program.
So it doesn't have, and you, what is a pilot? Well, it could be three, it could be five, whatever you.
It could be one.
Or, you know, I think, but you need multiple, I think, to really get a better sense of work or not. Okay, closing the pool in the winter months. I think partly for the public is we kind of asked every department to take cutbacks. So they're not finalized, but we're kind of looking at this much money for every department. Am I not correct, General Manager?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's not specific items, but it's more the whole department. So the pool closing is one that a lot of the public thinks we're going to save a bundle of money of shutting the pool down. And you still have to chlorinate it. There's still some cleaning. There's things that have to happen even if it's not being used. So there is a balance, but maybe there's a higher demand time and a lower demand time that makes some sense for that. The property tax revenue, you mentioned that there's a higher turnover, and that actually is, we're generating more property tax than what was predicted, just because so when you sell a property, it has a new assessment to the current market value, and so there's a new tax rate. So there's money coming in there that's a little beyond what we had predicted, which is really good news. By the way, I'm sorry, I wanted to preface this. We've gone from a $1.5 million deficit to $425 million. So I have to highly compliment our general manager, our fiscal person, and our staff for putting something together that I think that's a number, at least that I can live, 5%. And it is 5% for this year. It's not forever, because we are looking at some other real changes in our district, and I'll come to that in a minute. Let's see. So the municipal service group, I think it bears a little more explanation of what the difference between Don Ashton and AP Triton. So you referenced Don Ashton for the annexation. And if you don't know, Don Ashton was the general manager for the county, and it is highly regarded and knows all the players, whether they're fire districts or board of supervisors or the LAFCO, all of these different peoples and entities. So he's helping us to navigate that, and it is a challenging thing, but that's his role. But could you, general manager, could you explain why we're using AP Triton, why that's important?
AP Triton is a consulting firm made up of fire professionals or related to the fire agency, and they help districts with annexation. They help districts with strategic plans or master planning for different fire agencies, and capital improvement projects and things like that. So they're a consulting firm made up of fire professionals that come in and kind of are that third party objective person that can come in and say, yeah, gee, I think your fire agency could use X, Y, and Z or something like that. So they are supporting the district's conversations with the annexation discussions that we're having with El Dorado County Fire District, Rescue Fire District, and then also El Dorado Hills Fire District. And they're going to provide the data regarding the fiscal health of each agency, what that agency could do for us fiscally, and then also service levels. What are the current service levels here at Cameron Park? And if we annex with this fire agency, would those service levels stay the same? Would they increase? Would they decrease? So they're kind of the data side of these annexation discussions, and providing information to the two board members. We're having 2x2 meetings where two of our board members sit with two of the board members from other agencies with their key staff and have these conversations about annexing into another district. So they support that. Don Ashton is on a contract through MR Municipal Services Group. He is, I would say, coordinating and leading these discussions as kind of the lead person. He organizes the meetings, he sets the agendas, and he is able to have those conversations and make those conversations meaningful and lead us through that process. So those are the two contracts that are related to our annexation discussions about fire services. I think did I answer your question?
Yes. So why that's important is fire services are very specialized. These people do and have a language and they have ways of looking at things. And so rather than our trying to negotiate, we've brought in fire professionals to help us negotiate and look at what services are needed in our community. So we recognize that need. But where it's irrelevant tonight is to the budget. We're looking at a $425,000 budget. What we're hoping is one of these other fire contracts, we're not going to be running the huge deficit that we currently are. So that's the hopeful thing, is it? We don't know that, but that's the hope. So that's why those things are very important in this conversation tonight. On the weed abatement, my understanding is that, and now we're being held First of all, how many acres do we have in parks and supervision of land that we do with up currently?
Open space?
Yes.
Roughly 40 acres.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And yet, we've been holding or cutting back your staff, your park staff. Is that not correct?
That's true.
Yeah. So somehow we need to do more with less staff. And my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, General Manager, is this is a new requirement, that a higher standard than we had previously?
So how I would characterize it is probably more of an evolution, maybe, is the best way to characterize this. The district made significant efforts back in 2018, 2019 timeframe to make our park properties compliant with the district's ordinance and provide a fire safe community, whether it was mowing around the perimeter of the open space, whether it was, you know, reducing fire fuel on the entire property. We had different methods, tractors. We had the Growlersburg crews from CAL FIRE, and then we also had a follow-up spray program. That was put into place. I believe that the expectations have elevated since that initial program was put into place. And so that is why Mike is requesting an additional $35,000. I think the original program was about $20,000 to $30,000. Yeah, and so this additional request is being asked for or allocated in this budget because the fire standards, you know, have come up a little bit.
So
the expectations have.
So you currently have staff doing abatement with existing staff, but this is beyond that, what you've done.
So what it is Growlersburg, CAL FIRE Growlersburg does the majority of the work. Staff still have a part in it to supervise and help lead. And really, when we first put the program in 2019, we were targeting all the high grasses, and we were trying to put fire breaks around all the properties, 30 to 50 foot fire breaks from the perimeters, from property lines and stuff like that. But if you read the ordinance close, if you can't disc those fire breaks, which we don't have the ability to actually turn the soil, and there's a couple reasons why, then all the vegetation that's either 8 feet or less has to be removed. So if you've seen the disc golf course lately, we've actually accomplished that, or almost accomplished that, but there's a lot of vegetation that has to come out in order to achieve that in the ordinance.
Is that the worst place that you're looking at?
No, Knollwood Park, Gateway Park, Royal Park are all...
All right there.
Yep.
Wow.
We have those 30 to 50 foot fire breaks around them, which is great, and that was a huge accomplishment. But in order to bring all the vegetation to 8 feet, or get rid of all the vegetation that's 8 feet or less, is going to be a challenge. It's going to be a lot of contractors and mastication and stuff going on to get that done.
And $35,000 will cover it, or it just starts the process?
It's probably just going to start it.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank
There's
you.
A lot of hoops when you're talking about a lot of these properties have waterways. You're talking game and other entities that would have to get involved in order to.
It's not that straightforward.
It's not that straightforward. Certain areas are, and those are the ones that we would obviously tackle first.
Okay.
But there's going to be hoops on some other ones to jump through.
Director Scobie, anything further?
Yeah, I would. One other thing came to mind. When estimating the savings for the closing the pool in the winter months, how much did you allocate in that for saving on equipment? You know, filter maintenance, just general use hours. What type of equipment usage?
Are you talking about like disposable equipment, or are you talking about more of a capital nature? Like
more of a capital nature, because if there would be some savings in a capital nature if they're not used. You know, if we cut their usage, you know, 30%. That would extend when we'd have
the
to
life.
Come up. The lifespan of the
Correct.
Equipment.
Correct.
So has that been included in our
no.
savings?
No, these are just operational costs.
And that's staffing.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a few years ago, and I don't know. I haven't been here, and I'm not sure what happened to it. There was, at one point, an initiative with a user group, and I don't remember what user group it was, that a portion of their fees were dedicated to capital improvements. So they paid a fee. It was, you know, mostly operational, but like 5%, or there was an amount of money that then was diverted for these kind of capital initiatives. So if we don't have that in place, it is something that we should take a look at as we move forward with these user agreements. Because even if you, even sports fields, it's not just the pool, the sports fields as well. I mean, you know, there's irrigation systems, reseeding, all of those. There is a capital, so backstops and all that. There's a capital aspect to our sports fields as well.
Or the equipment that maintains those places, mm-hmm. those fields.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And so that might be, I'm not sure how you would capture that. Since we don't have a capital improvement plan, we wouldn't be able to say, hey, look, we just extended its life. This would be the effect of extending its life 30% or whatever. Just bringing that up as something, that's all.
Yeah.
Okay. I have nothing further, so just now open to public input, questions. Good, sir, go ahead.
Yeah, my name is Christopher Fiegels, and I'm here, I guess, primarily as the president of the Sierra Sharks swim team, although I'm also been a resident of Cameron Park for 15 years and a lifetime user of parks. I lived in Chimbo Springs before that, from the time I was a kid. I'm also a board member and a coach for Pondo Little League, and a parent of an Aquasol swimmer. My kids took swim lessons here. I've come to lap swim here. I even went to the Santa swim when you had that the last couple times. So I'm obviously opposed to closing the pool in the winter months. Even just a recent comment, the saving on capital expenses, when you're talking about the pool, it's not as significant as you would think, because you're still going to have those tarps on all winter long, taking the weather. You're still going to have a lot of the equipment is exposed, so it doesn't really matter if there are people swimming in the pool. It's still going to wear down at the same rate because it's outdoors, whether it's being used or not. I think that closing the pool is largely a symbolic gesture. I mean, you're talking about $50,000 worth of savings in an $8 million budget. That's 0.6%. So it's not a significant portion of the budget, not a significant amount of money that you're saving. So it's a symbol. It's a symbol whether you close it, it's a symbol of, oh, we're being conservative. And yes, there are members of the community that think, they'll look at that and go, oh, wow, we're saving so much money because the pool is closed. When you're not actually saving that much money, as you mentioned. But keeping it open is also a symbol. It's a symbol of there being activity and there being things happening here at the pool. And there absolutely would be all throughout the year because Aquasol uses it all year round. It doesn't impact sharks directly, I would give you that. Like, we swim, we had a couple clinics over the winter, but our main season is during the summer and spring months, and so it doesn't have as direct of an impact on us, but we stand in solidarity with Aquasol. I mean, the swim community is a community, and I care about what happens to Aquasol as well. And it does affect whether or not we have those spring clinics, which we could, I mean, those winter and spring clinics, which we could have more of if the pool remained open. We talked about expanding our clinic program if it were to remain open. I think there are ways to close the deficit that the pool has in the winter without closing the pool altogether. I think it's possible to have more programs going on in the winter. Even the clinics that we're talking about running, we don't even have to run them. Like, the CSD could run them more directly with our coaches and then get more of the profit from those clinics. That would help. I think there are other ways to even just have additional programs, invite other teams that might practice in the winter, water polo teams and other things like that, and increase the awareness of the pool programs in the winter. Like I said, I do lap swim, and I've done it throughout the winter, and I think a lot of our community doesn't know that that exists. I've talked to many people about it and mentioned that I do that, and I don't think I've ever talked to anybody who didn't say, oh, I didn't know that they had that. So I think there are ways to increase the awareness of those programs and to keep the pool open. And so, yeah, I guess I would just say, I hope you don't close the pool in the winter, because I don't think it's worth it.
Well, thank you for your input. Anyone further? Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay, Steve, go ahead.
Well, it's just a lot of work that you have in front of you. So my name's Stephen Beck. Again, I brought futsal here about 15 years ago, and it's a thriving, growing program, and very much like the aquatic program, it binds the community together. It's very active. It can bring in revenue with the clinics. But I think that obviously I want to advocate for my futsal program in the gym. As you look at, you're stewards of this building, you're stewards of the finances, and it's not an easy task. My alarm is that this wildly successful program that brings in revenue, $20,000 in costs, you know, very, you know, I'm proud when I come and there's that young Aiden opening the door on a Sunday morning, right? And I think to myself, I'm glad I'm here and he has those hours, because it breaks down to about $450 a day, $800 a weekend in revenue for the district. It's not costing that much to run the program. So I just want a wise eye in how you look at the things, and to not be a obvious, this has to stay. I'm drawing kids from Cameron Park exclusively, but from Pollock Pines to Folsom. Those girls that were here that play high school soccer now only play high school soccer because they started in there in third grade, just like the swimmers that are going to make the swim team. So it's a live entity that bonds this community together. And I know the morale's rough. I know the hours. I've been here 15 years with different administrations, different recreational supervisors, different styles. It's about team building and being able to work together. And really, I think that Kim's brought it into line with, because there is a reduction in staff and labor and all that. And she's really kind of almost separate, like we register them, run the program, which is great. But I know it takes a toll on your staff. We as users hear it and feel it. And I want to not focus on the negative. I want to implore you to understand that team building as a community with you is what it's going to be for our youth. Whether we fail and our youth are on fentanyl or obesity or whatever,
TikTok.
Or we figure out how to allow them November through May. You want to close it on Sundays outside of that? Maybe it makes sense. But if I bring the revenue stream to you and a place where 4, 5, 6-year-olds all the way up to 17-year-olds of all skill levels and mental capacities, I have challenged kids. I have kids that never probably would have played soccer, but they came in and the parents couldn't believe. They had it in them, and I brought it out in them. I manage that program. I officiate it. I schedule it. So it costs the district nothing, aside from maybe the heat, which I'll tell you right now, shut it off. Because we'd be in there, and I'm like, you know, and she's busy, and she's heard me come, you know, everybody's hands are tied. But I'm telling you, if we build team-oriented, systematic relationships, I'll save you a lot of money, because we can't stand the heat, because we want the players cool, right? And then in the summer, you think, well, you're probably going to want the air conditioner. No, just leave it off, because in the summer, we have the heater on. No lie. It would malfunction or whatever, and it'd be like 90 degrees outside and 95 degrees in the gym. And I say that to lighten the mood. Because I really am willing to do whatever it takes, as far as if I got to do the key turn or the electronic entry. I don't want to take away from staff. I feel like my program is a revenue maker, and we can employ people, and it won't hurt you. And we can work together to make more of a program. If I work with clubs, I can fill you probably 3 or 4 days a week. But be careful what you ask for. Because that revenue still is going to take work to make. I just take my program very personal, and I put my heart and soul, and I call one person. I can have thousands of people here, no joke, because they bring their uncles, their aunts, their grandparents, their cousins, from Pollock Pines to Folsom, no lie. I want to very respectfully just ask that you see how obvious that the Sunday Futsal League is a revenue stream. And should be a positive part of what stays in place.
How many children are involved in that?
About 200 every session. So 194 is approximately what I, my numbers that I can guarantee is a safe guess. 194 youth players, but they bring their parents, and you would not believe how many people come to watch them play. Because I manage that gym. I need folks wear masks during the mask mandate. I was one of the only programs during COVID because my following respected me and I respected the rules and they didn't come in if they didn't wear a mask.
Could you tell me how many children are using Aquasol?
In sharks.
Aquasol is the...
I'm Aquasol.
You're Aquasol.
Okay. We're at about 185 right now.
Okay, I just want to have an idea, idea of the number. Thank you.
And we have about 225.
Okay.
Over some sharks. Sharks is 225.
Okay.
Yeah. And I apologize, I have to go to my doctor.
Thank you for that. Yeah.
Okay. So again, with those 200, that's a revolving 200. I get new players that have never played before. I get returning players. It can fluctuate from 175 to 225. And again, the spectators are in the bleachers and aren't allowed to yell at their kids. So we build a culture, a soccer culture, and those kids are now playing in high school at high level clubs because of the program that they were in. It's one of the factors that made their family appreciate the protocols because some places don't honor that. Yeah. And don't demand that parents don't yell at their kids. But if you go to a San Juan or a Placer United or a Sac United, the high-level clubs, it's the first thing the coaches and the team managers or the club protocols will teach the parents. Yeah. We won't tolerate it. If you want to yell at your kid, take them to a different club. Okay.
Thank you so much for your input and your enthusiasm. Do we have any further input from our
public?
Did you have something, Barbara? Mm-hmm. No? Okay. All right, you had something, sir. Okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, at first, it's like I said, I think we came here in 2018 on a year-round basis, and we first started off, we were up at Union Mine in El Dorado, and we would come here in the fall months when water polo was taking over the pool up there. And we worked with Jill to be able to come here year-round, I think in 2018 is when we...
I think it was 19.
18 into 19,
yeah.
I think it was that kind of year that we had to blend over. And... up there, our membership was around 50, 60 swimmers. And we came down to here, and we became kind of a hub down here in Cameron Park. And it allowed the program to grow, and we consistently sit at 130, we'll go to 150 an hour, but 180, we'll have about 200 kids through the winter months in the fall. And part of the reason that we also grow to 200 is we also work with the seasonal teams. So with the summer league teams, with the Sharks, and those guys, so that their kids can still come in 3 times a week to continue to program and to continue to work on the swimming, because they love to swim, but they don't want to make the commitment of a full year-round team. But it still gives them that opportunity, and or the kids that want to swim high school, but again don't want to make the commitment to year-round, gives them that seasonal time to swim with us during the winter months to prepare for their high school season in February. So it gives those other kids that are summer team still a chance to swim year-round to prep for that, and. We're kind of in that middle spot here. Cameron Park is fantastic. I've moved my family here 10 years ago. And as you guys said, from the property taxes, we've seen our neighborhood switch over. We used to have the only 2 girls in the block. Now they're one of the older kids at 10, with all the other people with little kids running around now. It's been fantastic. And I also see that here with the lesson programs and everything else going on. But because we're now here, we are the one year-round program in El Dorado County. We're the only thing in El Dorado County. So it's keeping the kids in El Dorado County in the county. And it's helping us then foster those relationships and build it with the middle schools, with the high schools, and the summer league team. So yes, we're working on building a year-round program, and I'd mentioned the one letter that I sent that we now have a swimmer that actually just flew out 2 days ago to Ireland for Team USA. So he's representing Team USA, and he came through a program with the Olympic Trials in 2021. Is now the 6th fastest swimmer in the U.S., trying to make the Olympic team in 2024. And then we just took a swimmer down to Junior Nationals in Irvine, California, and placed one of the top times in the country. But then on the flip side, we have, there's other little kids, you know, a little 8-year-old, they bought, got a medal this big this year at the Junior Olympics, and she grinned side to side. And then we have, you know, two of the kids with osteogenesis that are in the pool year-round, getting physical therapy, but they are as hard charging as you can come by in that pool, and it allows them to do that physical activity year in and year out and on a day-to-day basis to get that physical activity. So while we are a competitive team, we're also hosting a lot more than just the competitive side of it, just the swimming side of it. And we help facilitate sport with a lot of the other programs that are doing it seasonally, but it gives them that opportunity to do more there. So it's, and we've been, I mean, we have a great relationship with the staff. I always tell our kids, that is our office, so I treat that with the most respect possible. We will be the first ones to pull covers off. We'll be the first ones to pull them on. You know, we'll keep do the lane lines. We'll work the block. We'll do whatever. You know, the only thing we didn't do was the flags, and Kim was out there with the glue and doing all that kind of stuff. She did that. But, you know, I mean, it's, and I, and in terms of the capital, and Mike can correct me if I'm wrong, but the pumps pretty much have to be run 24/7. And they're not designed to really be shut down and shut off and shut down and shut off. And so there's actually more wear and tear on pumps and heaters and chlorines and all those kind of things to turn them off and on than it is just to run them at a consistent flow. They run much better than they're designed to run all year. So even if you do shut down the pool in the wintertime, you still got to get flow through there. Otherwise, you get algae and you get everything else backed up, and you've got to keep some consistent flow. So, you know, the, in terms of that, I think there might be a little bit there. It won't be run. The heater obviously wouldn't be run as consistently, and that would be the one thing. But I also know here it's hard to kind of gather because the propane is all one big pipe, and it just feeds everything down there. So as much as you can turn it off, we don't want to turn it off. We do need to have it on. We need to heat it running during the winter time because it can jump a little 78. We're in trouble. But I think it's really the big picture of kind of what we're offering. And it's not just the summer. It's not just the winter time. It's what we're offering for people that runs into the summertime.
I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
And it's your, from your perspective, so I have to bring another's perspective because we're looking to save money. For in your competitive swimmers, is it important for them to swim 12 months a year, or does it not make that much difference if they do take a couple of months off because we're shut down? Or do they have to move to another pool to continue?
We have to move to a different pool.
So they can't, yeah. They have to maintain that level.
Yes, to be at that level, the level they're swimming at, it's kind of unfathomable, but those kids at that senior level are swimming at that next higher level that is, yeah, they can't afford. They're chomping at the bit right now. We're taking our 2-week break right now, and I'm getting emails from parents going, can we start? They're bouncing off the walls, and I mean, I've seen a couple of the kids, and they're chomping at the bit to get back in it, to get going again. But it's, yeah, if they miss that much,
they lose what they gain.
Okay,
very good. Thank
very
you.
Noticeable.
Yeah, yes, Ben.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask a question, Ms. Jones, if you don't mind. What percentage of the kids in your program reside in Cameron Park?
So we have 155 families, and I want to say 35% are Cameron Park. And then if you bring in rescue and Shingle Springs and those things, that bumps it up. I think there's another 10 or 15 families from that area. So it kind of depends how you define it.
40-45% maybe?
Yeah.
If you
rescue Shingle Springs,
okay.
Cameron Park, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the other probably 40% is El Dorado Hills. It's,
gotcha.
And some of those are like where Cameron Park and like where you drive through and
we don't know which is which.
Right, exactly.
Right, okay.
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 Thank you
for that input. Anyone else?
So,
yes.
Yes.
Go ahead.
And I don't want to take anything. I'd like to talk to you about your program. Anything away from anybody here. But I've lived here 31 years. I've been in the county 46 years. And when we built this center, it wasn't intended to be a year-round training ground for swim teams. And I understand. And however, I don't see the program go away. But are they aware that it's $20,000 to $30,000 a month to heat the pool? And would that continue, Mike? What would happen in the winter if we did shut the pool down to the propane cost for the pool?
So
I'd like an answer.
The pool would not be heated. The pool would not be heated if we closed
and
it down.
Okay. And I know we don't have a split system, right?
We don't. So we would still have to heat the gym in other classrooms. Yeah.
Everything costs more. And, you know, COVID hit, and this basically really, I think, what caused a lot of our issues. So you go to the grocery store, you're paying more. Well, then I say, the swim teams need to pay more. That's my feeling on it. I know it's expensive for kids to be in sports. My grandkids went to Eldo. I bankrolled them in snowboarding, so I know it's expensive. I work at Sam's in my retirement, and I see what people are paying every week. But that, you know, to be able to offer this, this is supposed to have been a community pool. And on the other side, I don't use the pool, but I hear complaints of people, residents who can't come here and use the pool as a community because the swim teams are here. So you do have a tough decision to make. But I wanted to just touch on just a couple more things, Sid. I'm not for not paying directors. Now, Monique, I think you said to reduce the number of meetings.
The number of payments per month. So there's a cap
to,
of 500.
To go to two meetings? Mm-hmm. And not,
a cap of five.
Because I don't want my elected officials, I don't want you to do it for free. Mm-hmm. Because when we pay you that stipend, I believe that it holds you. In other words, you know what I'm saying. It's not to say, well, I'm doing it for free, so what do I care? Not to say you would think that way, but some elected boards members would think that way. Reducing the office hours in the winter time when we're slow might be an option to save some money. And then I've mentioned this before about a turnkey operation for this building. When you rent it out, you give the keys to the people that are renting it. They set their room up, they tear it down, they do the cleaning. Almost every hall I know in El Dorado County is Fireman's Hall, City Hall, Shakespeare Club, the community center down here. They don't have people babysitting the renters. And if the people don't do the setup or the cleanup, you keep their money. There's different ways of raising more revenue like that. Also, I'm maybe looking at renting this building on a Sunday to a church. We've mentioned that many times over the years. Looking for people that want office spaces just direct to use once in a while where you could utilize these classrooms, partition them off. So, and as far as for, I know how you feel about raising salaries, because I'm not want anybody not to get their raises, but they are getting raises every year in cost of living right now. There's 13 salary steps. Also, they're working under an MOU. You do not hire and you do not give pay raises when you are in a $500,000 deficit, Monique. Down the road, yes. And I do agree they need to be paid more. I am a retired public employee. I'm all for that. But there's just the logic of what you guys have ahead of you. And a lot of this you guys have been talked about over the years, and there's been no forward movement. So this is a year to do it.
So, thank you.
Okay?
You had something, sir.
Yeah, I would like to expand on a couple of points. First thing that Steve brought up, I have a couple of cousins with younger children that are just starting into the futsal program, and they do live up there. They live in Camino and Placerville, and they rent. And they look at this program as an opportunity, and they see an opportunity for this community. And they say, I think I want to live there eventually. And from what I heard from you guys, a lot of your revenue is coming from property increased values.
Almost all of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And without that, without people that are renting with young kids that want to move into these neighborhoods, you're going to take away that advantage you have. If you continue to cut a program that brings this kind of opportunity to you, you're cutting your own face. You're cutting your nose to spite your face. So that's my first point for you guys. But yeah, you do have people from other communities. You should cherish that. A lot of these people have young kids, a lot of them are renting, and a lot of these people are going to look for a place to live or buy, and you want them to buy in this place. You want them to help increase your property value, so you're going to get more revenue, as you've experienced already. With regard to Steve's setup, it makes no sense. His fees are next to zero for you. You have a sunk cost in this gym. Not using it doesn't save money. That's all I can say about that. I don't know what level of government accounting involves closing a door on a building and not opening it. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? If not, back to the directors. Anything further, Dr. Scobie?
Yeah. So after hearing what the community has to say, what type of bandwidth does staff have to increase the usage here at the community center? Is there any bandwidth for us to pursue additional usage to generate revenue to cover additional salaries so that we could increase our general usage here, such as in the pool, the gym, the classrooms, the assembly hall? I know these things take time. Is there, I mean, I know it takes, yeah. So that's my question.
So,
Jill and I are probably about to say the same thing.
So, you want to start?
I was just going to say, I think ultimately it's going to come down to the board's priorities of us and our workload. The board is going to need to make a decision on here's the framework, and we will within that, and what sets some priorities if. Getting users, additional users in here is where the priority is versus something else, then we will work to make that happen and can report back. I don't think that we can give you a solid answer on that particular thing at this moment.
So when we started in 2019 with this initiative to increase programming here at the community center, there were other programs that were occurring in our park system that we didn't do. So we were very purposeful in wanting to program because there wasn't a lot of people here. And so we did have an effort to increase revenues, increase participation, and increase the number of programs here. And that happened. And it's also got a synergistic approach or synergistic relationship in that the people that come to swim meets or the people that come to futsal then are like, wow, this is a great place. I'd like to have my family reunion here. So it's all the participation here is all connected. The community center will never be fully cost, there will still certainly never be fully cost recovery here at the community center. But through fees, I don't know that we can change the 40-60 split that we have with our instructors, but we can look at increasing the class fee. So by increasing the class fee, that, you know, that would raise additional revenue for the district. We've already talked to both the swim teams, and haven't talked to Steve yet, but we can increase our annual rental fees. I mean, so we can increase fees. So you can increase revenues through increased programming and increase fees. And we can give that a shot.
Why can't you change the percentage for the instructors?
It's an industry standard, and if you change the percentage, they'll probably go to someplace else to offer their class. What do you think?
Yeah, I say, and we kind of, typically it's a 60-40 split, depending on the usage of the class and fees and things like that. There are some ways that we change that, but us taking more than 40% would be very unheard of.
Darn it.
I just, we have to, I think that the increasing revenues would have to be coupled with, and you know, looking at more efficient uses. Like if we allow access to Steve and do this pilot program on, you know, having our renters kind of take care of themselves, you know, because those increased fees and that increased traffic then generates additional cost for the facility side of the business. And so that's where you get into this give and take relationship, because you are now increasing programs, which is increased revenues, but does it truly offset, you know, the cost for a staff person to be here to open and close and all of that? So there's a lot of discussion to be had. And again, I think it is about letting us know what's important so that we can work towards those. If programming at the pool and the community center is important, then we won't do as much special event programming in our park system. So that's those are the kinds of things that we need to hear from you.
One of the things that I, if we're going to do this, I actually think we should send this pilot program idea towards the, to the board. Mm-hmm. But one of my concerns is how do we manage the bathrooms? You know, because if there's no staff here, and I don't know, I can see things getting out of hand.
I think the electric key idea already takes care of that, isn't it?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so are we going to be asking those trusted people to clean the bathroom? I don't know if that's the right thing to do.
Well, and then you're looking at increased fees, but for less services. And so that's where you get into this conversation that has to have, how can you increase fees and then decrease services?
Yeah.
And so...
I've heard you say at one point in one of our meetings, and I've been trying to figure it out on my own, but I haven't been able to, so maybe you can help me with it. At one point in time, you said that we, in order to right-size our district, so we're going to have so much staff, we can only do so many things with so many people, and that could entail that we might have to omit revenue-producing programs. So could you explain that? And maybe it's only because they're producing $50. I don't know.
I think that you have a direct cost for staff, like Steve Beck's, you know, program, obviously successful, has a direct cost for staff. I think that what is not recognized in that is, yes, the capital, but it's also the staff supervision, the staff training, the oversight by a supervisor. There's a lot of things that cost the district money in addition to offer that program in addition to that one staff person.
Right.
So I think that that's more what that is. And again, you know, I think there was a suggestion made that, well, you know, why can't we tell people, well, they can only meet at this time, and so that we schedule when people, community groups meet here, that they have to be back to back to back to back. Well, everybody has their own schedule. I mean, I can't drive that schedule. And so sometimes you have a morning fitness class, and then you have an hour break, and then you get another, the senior nutrition is here for a little while, and then you get another break. So it's, I will say that there's efficiencies that we can have in our schedule. Right now we program from 7 o'clock in the morning until 10 o'clock at night, 9 or 10 o'clock at night. So I think that there are some efficiencies that can be had, and then by making those changes, saying that, okay, on Mondays and Tuesdays, we're only going to be open until 6, not 9. By doing that, then the groups have a choice. Well, I'm either going to meet at this time, or I'm not going to be here at all. So Kim, Mike, Matt, and I have not had those conversations. It hasn't been possible. We're going to do our best to have something to you before the board meeting. What I'm hearing is that what I'm hearing from you is that programming at the community center and at the pool at or close to our current levels is important to you.
I would say we would look for those efficiencies, such as maybe reducing the time we're open, or I do think we need to make some. If there's, I don't know if we can squeeze any more efficiency out of you, because we've been asking you that for 5 years, and you know every time we only get this little sliver more, because I think we're almost as efficient as we could be.
Well, yeah, we made a lot of changes back in 2019 when we closed the lagoon. I mean, there was a lot of efficiencies and technology, you know, enhanced here and things like that. But I guess what I need to hear from you is, right now we have events, you know, such as. You know, there's a Halloween event, and there's, you know, some other. What I need, I guess, to hear from you is what is programming at the community center and at the pool more important than programming and activities in the park system?
Would you call the Halloween event
like,
a park?
Like Easter. We have an Easter program.
Easter egg hunt,
for example. Halloween event. You know, so there is only so much capacity that one person can have.
Well, what comes to my mind with that question is we would cut services that serve fewer people. Keep the ones that serve the most people so that we keep our community outreach, we keep our name out in the community, we have people coming. I know we have special programs that we need to keep. We have a grant and those we need to keep. But if we don't do the minimum class level of 5, maybe we have to up that to 10. And then we end up having only 20% of our programs.
So what I would say is that you have, for example, the user groups that we're here in our audience that are serving, hundreds of kids in a program that is reoccurring. And so that may be serving fewer people, but in a more structured, impactful program.
And for a longer period of time.
And for a longer period of time.
Yeah.
Whereas you have these one-day events, such as your Easter egg, that would probably reach more people, but not of the same, in the same manner, you know, same value, as somebody would say.
That's a horrible, horrible choice to make.
Those are the choices. And you don't have to decide right now. I mean, I think that, you know, we will continue this dialogue. I can talk to individual board members and things like that. But the fact of the matter is we have to make some choices. And I'm doing the best I can. I mean, everybody is, you know, doing the best they can to make those choices. And we can continue to have those conversations after the. I know that we're coming up with a hard stop at 5:30.
And we've kind of gotten the public input. Unfortunately, we could continue this.
Yeah. What I would like to see is a general vision of how we would do that.
Okay.
Something that I propose, like we want to serve the most people. We want to serve as many people. Keep our name recognition out there, and. I still like that idea, and then maybe the programs where we meet less, those I think that's what makes sense to me. So that would, you know, it probably eradicate most of our small classes. You know, we have a minimum
class
litter. I mean, that's what that would do.
It would eliminate all of your special interests. So your intro to guitar or ukulele,
yes.
Your ballet classes,
yep.
Your cooking with kids or Spanish classes, that's what it's going
that's
to
look like. That's what we do, yeah. So that's what I would look at. I would try to reach as many as we can, and that would be the priority. That's my personal priority. That makes sense to me. What do you think?
Well, you heard me asking the questions, the number of children affected by your program and your program. I was probably looking at a similar way, but who's to say that Spanish class, that couture, the class is important in our community too, but it's definitely a hard choice. I really like things like the Easter egg hunt, the Halloween thing. I think it brings our community together. And that's one thing I've heard tonight really touched me was things that do build our community, build teams, build a social connection. We definitely need those as a society and as a community. So that might be something I would throw into the mix. Does it have that value? You know, that's a value system. It's not a monetary system.
Well, and can it be found somewhere else?
Yeah. Oh, and that would be certainly, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but the couture cooking thing probably could be found elsewhere. Okay, I think we need to move on from this particular item.
Do you have the information you need,
yeah,
Jill?
Yeah.
Okay, very good.
It's all on tape recorder. I'll go back.
And people who want to talk to us individually, we have another committee meeting coming in, but we need to move on. Okay, fire engine agreement number two.
Number two. This is a report back regarding our current purchase agreement for a new fire engine. There was some conversation about whether or not we should continue with this purchase in light of the discussions we're having with other agencies as far as annexation goes. I did reach out to the provider, and we can cancel the purchase agreement for the penalty is about $8,000, very nominal. But I do understand that this engine is of value, that our purchase agreement is well below current market, and so it could either be a value to those agencies that we're having annexation discussions with, or it could be a value that if we just sold it. So I'm thinking that at this point, I'm recommending that we just continue with our purchase agreement because there is a value to this engine to us.
How is it financed, or has that not yet been determined?
I believe it was supposed to come out of Fund 7. So okay. Director Scobie's question regarding the current payments we have on the fire engine and this fire engine, and then the other things we've got. We can give you a bigger picture on Fund 7.
Director Scobie?
No, I think that's great. I just want to make sure we haven't over-allocated that fund.
I think might be my concern, too. Okay. Anything further on that item?
No. I have nothing further. We should keep it.
Okay.
So if it doesn't go to the board, we're just going to keep it, or unless you want to give a quick update.
I think just your update would be appropriate.
Yeah.
Okay.
Matters to Infront.
Yeah. Okay.
So for public input, was it an engine that we, Type 3 engine, that's the more the four-wheel drive ones, and it was one that we got a pretty good purchase on, and it was in December, and that's so we're in the queue for that engine, which would be what, about 2 years from now, is that okay, very good. Any public input on that? Gentlemen, our fire personnel, no. Mm-hmm. Okay, yes sir.
Just a quick question, was that earmarked for a replacement schedule?
Yes.
Or okay,
yeah, we had an older one that was kind of
when is that due?
What is due?
The replacement schedule for that engine that it was earmarked for.
It was about a 20-year-old engine?
Yeah.
It was an old engine.
Yeah.
Past its useful life.
Okay, nothing further public. Okay, back to us. Anything further, Dr. Scobie? No?
No.
Okay, nothing for me. Move on to items for future committee meetings. So what are we taking? Or what are we bringing
future
back
committee meetings? I don't have a schedule of future committee meetings yet, but I'm sure that there will be plenty of things in the future. As far as moving the budget to the board of directors, I can do this a couple of different ways. I don't know that this is how I would like to proceed. I would like to provide the district roll-up budget that you have tonight. I can also provide the department numbers and perhaps a brief a written description of the service levels provided by that department and what they can do. But when I present it to the board, I will be presenting the district budget, and then this department heads will be available for questions if there's any questions for the department heads. Unless you want a full-blown presentation department by department, which is not what I'm recommending.
Well, I definitely want the department budgets included.
Okay.
I think that your idea of a service level report, and I think it's important for those that changed, as we talked about earlier, make sure those are called out so that we don't get bogged down in questions.
Right.
So that it's all there and the public can read it, and it would be in the report.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as I mentioned before, you know, we are moving forward with this concept that staff is going to provide the services they can within the budget we approve.
Right.
And so it's a little different this year. And I think that needs to be clearly explained on what impacts could happen.
Okay.
I think that's important.
Yeah.
And I think it also...
Oh, and then you had the service levels in there. I'm sorry.
I was going to say that almost drives the decision to, like, our rec department. Can they manage the Easter egg hunt or the Halloween thing? You know, that those would be... It's kind of back to them a little bit. Can they do that or not?
We'll come up with service level descriptions that we can, it may not be fully vetted. I think that this is going to be a process of living within our means, and there's going to be have to be a lot of conversation, you know, and updates to the board and the Parks and Rec Committee and things like that. But we can certainly give you a description, a good description of service levels.
And then we have positions we're not filling. Those would be brought out as well.
There's only one position at this point you're not filling, and that's the rec coordinator.
And so that needs to be highlighted.
I think just filling those in a little bit. No, you've done it very
And then is the what about the closure of the pool and these other things you talked about of that, is that in this budget?
With it is currently in the budget. What I heard previously is you would like me and staff to stay kind of within that 5% deficit. We'll consider the conversation this evening, and Kim and I will go back along with Mike, and we'll have some more conversation, and you may have something, you may see something different coming forward.
Okay. Yeah, I did hear loud and clear that I don't know if $50,000 is going to make or break us considering the amount of people we serve, but it would in the future. It could be in the future.
Well, I think that there is some momentum that has been, you know, coming forward here at the district, and I don't think staff or our user groups wants to lose that momentum that we have generated here over the last 5 years. And that could certainly, it had a risk of being disrupted during COVID, but we came out of COVID and we're doing pretty good. So we need to, you know, it would be nice to continue that.
And it was really nice to hear our user groups tonight. It really is. This has been different because the people we typically hear from are not people who necessarily use our building or use our pool. I mean, it's nice to hear your input. I really appreciate it. So okay. I think we're kind of wishy-washy how you're going to present.
She's going to do the main roll-up. She's going to do each department. She's going to do a report of service levels on top and call out any staff reductions and call out any large changes from the preliminary budget.
Okay. And I'm going to consult my magic wand and all this.
Yeah. And it's going to make instant sense the first time we read it.
And my magic number was 5%. You're under that. So I'm very pleased and impressed.
Okay.
But how you do that, I think it's going to go back to your staff to a large degree.
Well, and it may be, we'll have to.
Hopefully the other directors will have long, in-depth conversations regarding it before they come to meet.
Well, thinking through our timeline, it may be that I release an agenda on Friday and what reports are available, but it may be that the budget report is not released until closer to Wednesday, so that it gives us time to figure out what we can do. So we'll figure that out.
So anything further?
No, that's all.
Okay, nothing for me. Okay, a motion to adjourn is in order.
So moved.
And second, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned at 5:30.
Oh, okay. That is awesome.
Is someone else coming in here?
We have another committee.
Fire Services Committee.
Yeah. Oh. Okay, I guess
you're well placed.
I guess I'm here.
And we're happy you are.
Thank you. Jill, is the closure of the bathrooms in the parks part of the budget now? Or is because you saved that person's position?
Right. The feedback that we had gotten from the committee that we filled the position in the parks department, which meant the bathroom and the trash of the restrooms were done.
I think that's really important because if you're talking about how the community looks outside of the community, much less in the community, you have closed bathrooms. I lived in Sacramento during that. Closed bathrooms and uncleaned, garbage. It's awful. People hate it.
We have real pride in our parks.
Exactly.
Not being that way.
I think that's really important.
Bathrooms are the most important amenity in a park.
Yeah. I mean, you just, okay, great. Glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that was, I was concerned about that because I just, when I lived through that in Sacramento, everybody hated it.
Yeah.
And bad feedback, to the government about what was going on.
What park were you in?
I lived in East Sac, so I lived near a lot of parks. McKinley, the main park, and there's, I forget the name of the little park that was near 53rd.
It was City, right?
Yeah, it was all City.
Yeah.
It's all City.
I know the manager over there.
Yeah, that was a bad time.
Yeah, her name is Shannon Brown, so she's the parks manager over there.
So I missed the first 15 minutes. Basically, you've already approved the amount for the contract with the Cal Fire, so that number is fixed in your budget.
Correct.
So there's nothing moving or changing in that area?
No, there is a battalion chief who is leaving early, which may be a cost savings, but that is not being factored in at this point. But it could be factored in the future.
Right. So the rest of it is then just trying to rein in the budget to get as close to zero without digging into your
fund balance.
You are doing it 5% around now.
Right. And, you know, if there is cost savings as we go forward, but there could be also, you know, Mike had a 3-inch, you know, water main break out at Kristen McCullough yesterday. And those things happen. And this budget is not going to have capacity to do that.
For capital.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay.
You got stuck saying?
Yeah.
It just depends on how much they're willing to dig into their, how much to save.
Well, and what we can do, what we can figure out here to make it more efficient.
Well, and also there's only so much you have for the people can do, and it seems like they're stretched, and then you'll lose those people.
Yeah, it's called right-sizing the district.
Exactly, and so I think, I mean, I love all these other programs. I'm happy